From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. Now, two stories about innovations in automobile safety as part of our series called On the Road to Safety. In a moment, we'll hear about so-called aging suits that help engineers feel what it's like to drive for the elderly. First, a system that deletes the driver from the equation altogether. It's called Personal Rapid Transit, or pod cars. The idea is to deliver the convenience of the car without the pollution or congestion. Reporter Kathy Duchamp explains.
To understand how pod cars work, you have to go back to the future. Check out this clip from a 1958 Disney TV show called Magic Highway USA.
Tomorrow's living in spacious, well-planned communities will be closely integrated with the highway system.
The animated film shows a family piling into a pod-shaped vehicle. No wheels and no driver.
Electronics take over complete control. Progress can be accurately checked on a synchronized scanning map.
Now imagine a time when pod cars are added to the mix of bus and rail transit. A system actually exists today on the campus of West Virginia University.
We can transport, under optimum conditions, about 4,000 people an hour. It's quite a scene when you see all those vehicles out riding the guideway.
That's Hugh Keurig. He's in charge of the nation's first personal rapid transit, or PRT, system in Morgantown, West Virginia. It opened in 1975.
35 years ago, this was high-tech and top of the line.
Bright blue and yellow pods, the size of minibuses, zip students along roads, made just for them. You pick your destination before you get on, and you go there directly, no stops in between. Keurig says the problem is that the system is retro and not in a good way.
You know, now students view it as being slow, bumpy. It's sort of like the difference between a passenger rail of the late 19th century versus airplane transportation.
Keurig wants to give his PRT a 21st century upgrade, but it's not that easy. Because to date, no other personal rapid transit system has been built in the United States. Call it an odd duck that never took flight. But there is enthusiasm for pod cars across the Atlantic.
There's three stations and 18 vehicles, and there is some planning in the works to extend it to the entire airport.
That's Steve Rainey, sales guy for Ultra PRT, a company that's building a personal rapid transit system at Heathrow Airport outside London. It's scheduled to open this spring. The beige bug-eyed pods hold five passengers with luggage. Battery power gives them green cachet.
I think it has gone, for me, from this journey of being kind of a weirdo pushing exotic technology to more acceptance and more doors opened.
Several American cities are now doing PRT feasibility studies. Ithaca, New York, San Jose, California, and a group in Minnesota, among others. Rainey can see a day when people will choose pod transit over driving alone.
For people's commutes, driving alone in traffic, it's not like they love their car so much. You know, it's not quite the love affair. It's much more that it's the least worse of a series of alternatives that nobody really likes that much.
But would people really switch to a driverless pod? John Carnegie leads the Voorhees Transportation Center at Rutgers University.
I think it will be really interesting to see over the next decade how energy prices impact the way people are choosing to travel. And the more people decide that they would like to use modes other than the car, we may actually see a greater level of innovation.
Carnegie thinks Atlantic City would be a great place to test pod cars stateside. There are lots of tourists who need to get around, and a gambling culture that may be willing to roll the dice on something new. For NPR News, I'm Kathy Duchamp.
Now, high-tech solutions to help older drivers. By the year 2030, nearly 20% of drivers in the U.S. will be over the age of 65. The oldest drivers, along with teenagers, have the highest rates of fatal accidents. Michigan Radio's Tracy Samilton reports on innovations to help older people drive longer and more safely.
Tony Mirage knew something had to be done. After her 87-year-old friend and neighbor had three fender benders in a few months, it was only a matter of time before somebody got hurt. Eventually, the friend was convinced to give up her license, but her safety has come at a high price.
Now she doesn't get to go anywhere. It's the most beautiful part of the year for her. Her favorite time was always chasing the colors, and nobody even thinks to call her.
Losing the right to drive is a big deal, especially in this country. Some automakers want to give people better options than public transit. We lose all sorts of abilities as we age, like being able to turn our necks to see what's coming in the blind spot. More than a decade ago, Ford Motor Company developed a special aging suit to help designers feel and understand what it's like to be old. It's a jumpsuit with heavy, inflexible pads at the joints and neck. Ford's Wes Sherwood says it adds about 30 years to your body.
And the idea is, how can we have our young designers and engineers feel what it's like to have some of the limitations that many in the country have?
But today, Ford learns a lot more about the needs of older drivers in its virtual environment lab. Inside the dark room, people sit down inside a special car frame with movable parts that can be adjusted to simulate any new car design. Lab manager Elizabeth Barron helps the test driver put on special gloves and goggles.
You wear computer screens on your eyes that have left and right stereo view, and then you'll have a virtual representation of your hands, so you'll see these hands move when your hands move.
It's very Star Trek. The goggles instantly plunge you into a virtual world of streets and cars and pedestrians. On a computer, researchers can see exactly what the older driver sees and fix any problems. It's pretty Star Trek at General Motors, too.
So this works on a transparent phosphor technology that's coated onto the windscreen, onto the windshield.
That's GM's Thomas Seder. He works at the company's human-machine interface division, which is developing a windshield to help older drivers compensate for vision loss and slower reaction times. Images can appear on the glass, similar to the lines drawn on a football field on TV to highlight plays. The windshield can draw an outline around a road sign or the sides of the road in heavy fog. With infrared sensors, a small red icon of a deer could pop up just before the animal jumps in front of your car.
So you could take evasive action if you needed to.
It will be at least 6 years before this windshield comes to market, but other technologies are available now, like radar-assisted blind spot detection. Of course, all this work doesn't mean we'll never have to give up the keys, but most of us may be able to keep driving more safely and a lot longer than we do now. For NPR News, I'm Tracy Samilton in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. All this week, we've been reporting on efforts to make the roads safer. Today, we're going to hear about distracted driving, people driving while talking or texting on a cell phone. It's a clear risk on the roads, but people still do it all the time. As Nate DeMeo reports, safety advocates are trying to fashion a strong message, and they're drawing from the fight against drunk driving.
Chuck Hurley was working at the National Safety Council in the late 1970s. Which means he spent most of the Carter administration feeling like he was banging his head against the wall, trying to get people to get serious about drunk driving.
It was literally a joke on late-night television. It was normal behavior. It's how people got home.
At least, he says, until people heard one victim's story on the news and seemingly everywhere else, over and over again.
God, I don't want her to have died in vain.
Mariette Hartley stars in the powerful true story of Candy Leitner, the crusading parent who decided to stand up and fight by creating MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
It really electrified the country, both in terms of public policy, but also in terms of morality. It really became immoral to drink and drive.
Chuck Hurley is now MAD CEO. He says with distracted driving, the public policy changes are coming very quickly. Texting while driving, for instance, is already banned in 19 states. And that's just a few years after most people even sent their first text. But a change in attitudes might take something more. It might, you could say, take another Candy Leitner.
My name is Jennifer Smith, and I am the president of a nonprofit organization called Focus Driven Advocates for Cell-Free Driving.
Jennifer Smith can be forgiven for flubbing the name of her nonprofit. It is literally brand new. Just last fall, her mother, Linda, was killed by a driver on his cell phone. In her grief, she says, she looked for a group to join, something that was like Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She says when she didn't find one, she realized that she was the right person to start it.
You know, my mom's story was the perfect example, you know, not to mince words, you know, but it was such a cut and dry case. He was on the phone for less than a minute. He was driving for less than a quarter of a mile, and he just didn't see the light. This could have been anyone.
Smith says MAD was successful because it kept telling stories that replaced statistics with real people. So Smith has been telling hers. In interviews, she'll be on an upcoming Oprah alongside the young man who killed her mother, and in front of lawmakers alongside the family members of other victims.
We do have to make it illegal because that's going to be the big thing with people as well. It may be wrong, but it's still legal, so it can't be that wrong.
People love their cell phones. And distracted driving is still late-night joke fodder.
Teens have gotten a lot of flack recently for DWT, or driving while texting. And it's true, driving while texting can be very dangerous.
This is 19-year-old pop star Taylor Swift spoofing public service announcements during a recent Saturday Night Live.
That's why I founded Teens Raising Awareness About Awful Parent Driving.
This is the kind of thing that exasperates Priscilla Natkins of the Ad Council. She recently developed an actual public service campaign targeting teen drivers.
If you have credible sources saying, you know what, it's not such a problem, it makes our challenge that much more considerable.
The Ad Council's campaign tries to tap into the power of peer pressure. So rather than telling kids to stop texting or get off the phone while driving, it asks them to remind their friends not to do it. She says she wants her new campaign to work as well as an earlier set of ads with a similar message.
When friends don't stop friends from drinking and driving. Friends die from drinking and driving.
She says that people will only really change their behavior if they're afraid of doing something bad to others. It may be personal guilt as much as legal guilt that ends up saving lives. For NPR News, I'm Nate DeMeo.
Here's an update on what's sometimes called the digital divide. For years, surveys showed African Americans and Latinos had fewer computers at home than white people did. That might still be true, but something else seems to be happening with cell phones. Blacks and English-speaking Latinos are more likely to use cell phone features like text messaging, emails, and music. NPR's Felix Contreras reports on the reasons why.
You want to know who's using fancy phones? Check out these three teenagers pausing at a crosswalk in a busy pedestrian mall.
Can I ask you what you're doing right now?
I am texting.
And who are you texting?
This guy.
Jasmine Miller and her friends Alexis and Jamila White are on their way home after an evening out in a Washington, D.C. suburb. Miller is a 16-year-old African-American. Sisters Alexis and Jamila are 16 and 13 and are Panamanian. They represent one of the four main reasons why blacks and Latinos rank so high as users. Networking. Meaning, they text, and now they've pulled their parents in. Sisters Alexis and Jamila.
I mean, they text to us to, like, tell us while they're working, like, what we're going to do after school.
Well, my dad thinks it's cool.
Yeah, he's just learned all this new technology.
That cross-generational exchange is typical of how the use of technology catches on, then spreads among just about all ethnic groups. It just happens more often among blacks and Hispanics. Both the Pew Center and the Nielsen Company show blacks and Hispanics are using their phones more robustly than whites. You can see the numbers from the Pew Report on our website. Nielsen's numbers say Hispanics pay about $10 more per month on their cell phone bills than the average because of the increased services. In a cell phone store just off the pedestrian mall, sales rep Gustavo Rojas is selling a Spanish-speaking couple an upgrade on their cell phone service. The customers don't have a computer at home, so they're adding texting and an internet connection. Their purchase represents reason number two. A mobile upgrade is cheaper than paying for home broadband and a computer. Rojas says he has seen advanced use increase among his customers.
People are so sophisticated now that, you know, in their countries they might not have been so tech savvy, but here they come and they use the service and they know how to chat better than I do. You know, they come to show me things rather than me showing them things sometimes.
Just down the street from the store, Ornelio Perez is waiting for a bus after a day at his landscaping job. He's 46, from Guatemala, and represents another of the four reasons for the increased use, convenience. He says sometimes his family in Guatemala leaves him a text message or he sends one to them. For them, it's easier to stay in contact across borders and time zones with texting or using cell phones.
You cool with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You cool with what you got?
Not too far from the suburban mall in a Washington, D.C. high school, we find a group that represents the fourth reason for increased usage, youth. Latinos and blacks skew much younger than whites, so many of them become young early adopters. Senior LaJuan Johnson says she uses a cell phone because of the cost and convenience.
I decided I wanted a phone more than a laptop. Like, you have to worry about Wi-Fi and all that stuff. And you're not really always going to be able to take your laptop anywhere you go. So a phone is more convenient.
And while I'm interviewing Johnson, classmate Robert Charmer, who's sitting right next to her, gets a text message from her.
Who's texting you?
She just texted me.
She did? You see, I'm sitting right next to each other.
Just talking and texting is just that easy.
Just a few years ago, these mischievous teens may have been on the losing side of the so-called digital divide. But with their sophisticated uses of handheld devices, blacks and Latinos may be looking across that gap from the other side. Felix Contreras, NPR News.
You know apps. There are apps these days that let you follow airplane departures and landings, apps that steer you to new restaurants, apps that can imitate bagpipes, flutes, and bird calls, apps that can translate a baby's cries, and now an app to relax. Deepak Chopra joins us in our studios. He's taking his message of mind-body healing to the iPhone with an app called Stress Free, right, Dr.
Chopra? That's right, Scott.
Tell us what it does.
Well, most people, when they think of iPhones or Blackberries or just everything that's digital these days, they associate it with stress. You know, people are distracted. People are...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you because I'm checking to see if my iPhone is ringing.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
And, you know, seen people, I'm sure, at parties and social functions, and they're constantly on their app, and they're never there. So the thought came to me, why not use the very technology that is supposedly distracting you to bring you to the present, to help you focus on the moment, to help you get rid of stress. There's no stopping technology, and what we do with it depends on us.
How does this app promote that?
Well, first of all, this app reminds you constantly through the day to just stop and pause and reflect.
It's like an alarm telling you to relax?
Well, not an alarm quite. A soothing message, if you will, which comes in the form of music or meditation that says, you know, take a deep breath or reflect on why you're doing what you're doing. It also has inspiring messages, also has feedback. You can actually touch a portion of the app and it might tell you if you're at this moment stressed or relaxed and where you are, and then tell you exactly what to do to counterbalance your stress if you are stressed at that moment. You know, these days there's lots of ways to measure stress, as you know, galvanic skin response, temperature of the skin, et cetera, et cetera.
And the app can measure some of that?
The app will have a technology to be able to give you an assessment, yes.
Oh, my word. Well, and so if, in fact, the finding is your stress, your stressed.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you can do?
Well, many things you can do. You can, if you're not driving a car and you have a moment to, if you have a moment
you added that,
to
yeah.
be in a chair, you can do a guided meditation, or you can just listen to a joke that helps you change your point of view of the world, or you know how you're looking at whatever you're looking at.
I have to. Are there jokes on this?
There are going to be jokes on this.
Can you tell us one?
Yes, you know this fellow ends up in hell, and he's being shown around by the devil, and he sees a 97-year-old fellow with a 23-year-old girl in his lap, and he looks at the devil and he says, "That doesn't look like hell to me." And the devil says, "It is for the girl."
Oh, no, my gosh.
Help you shift your perspective a little bit.
That was not the joke I was expecting from you at all. But all right. And so it's jokes like that you hear.
Yeah, lots of jokes. Lots of very interesting things, actually, visualizations, meditations.
What would you say to those people who think that the best stress-reducing app they've ever heard of is the one that lets you turn off the iPhone?
Well, it would be wonderful to do that, except most people won't do it. Mm. So we're living, you know, have to be very practical. I see some remarkable benefits that will come of this technology. You know, there would have been a revolution in Iran and the government would have fallen down had the Islamic government in Iran not worked with Nokia to stop the Twitter messages that were going back and forth. There's the breakdown of these walls that didn't exist in the first place. And, you know, there's an emergence of a global culture and global values that will make some of the things we think of obsolete. You know, James Bond will be obsolete, for example, because there won't be any secrets anymore. I don't know where we are going with this, but it could be very interesting.
Dr. Deepak Chopra, he's got a new app out called Stress Free. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Okay, it's no surprise to encounter a Hollywood movie that's been remade. It is a surprise to discover the way that people remade the movie Star Wars. David Nogueras reports that hundreds of people are piecing it together bit by bit on the internet.
A long time ago, and by a long time, I mean back in 1977, director George Lucas sent Ben Kenobi and Luke Skywalker into the cantina at the Mos Eisley spaceport. Lucas's script called for a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Location scouts found a small bakery in windswept Tunisia that fit the part.
Han Solo, I'm captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed. If it's a fast ship.
To recreate this iconic scene, musician Jordan Scanella used his friend's third story walk-up in Brooklyn. He took some other liberties with the source material, too.
Passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed. If it's a fast ship.
Fast ship. Never heard of the Millennium Falcon.
Should I have?
It's the ship that made the castle run in less than 12 parsecs.
It's amazing, the amount of work people put into it.
That's Casey Pugh. He's the driving force behind Star Wars Uncut. He says people are excited to take part in the project because they just love Star Wars.
And they hope to see themselves in, like, the end film, you know? It's their chance to be in the Star Wars universe.
Pugh cut the film into 15-second bites for people to recreate online. There are now more than 600 at StarWarsUncut.com.
And that's a trick, isn't it? And it's going to cost you something extra. $1,000 in advance.
1,000? We could almost buy our own ship with that.
Chuck Ozaeus, a director of photography in Los Angeles, cast his daughter Samantha as Han Solo. His son Will plays Luke, and Tilly, the family dog, stands in on hind legs as Chewbacca. Ozaeus says at least two of the three have expressed interest in reprising their roles.
My kids bring it up nearly daily. You know, when are we going to do the next scene? So I'm sure we'll do another one soon.
The kids, however, might have to wait for Casey Pugh's next project, The Empire Strikes Back. Ozaeus says he doesn't expect Tilly the dog to play Yoda. That role, he says, is better suited for a cat. For NPR News, I'm David Nogueras.